Jacko, Sherry Davis, Gall, Furnace, and myself, Representative Ellis. We do have a sign-in sheet at the back of the room if people intend to comment on the legislation before us this morning. We have three items on the calendar: House Bill 66, establishing a permanent commission for children and youth, and then the two bills that have previously been before us, increasing the excise tax on cigarettes and licensing retail tobacco sales. We are on teleconference this morning. We have a number of sites that have joined us or will be joining us throughout the meeting. So even though there's no one on teleconference at the moment for the Youth Commission, which is the first item, let's all use our microphones.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Furnace.
Are you proposing any action on that for others?
Yes, I'm hoping to see if we can move all three of the bills today. So we'll see if we can get to that point. As you all remember, they've all three been before us before. There's been subcommittee work on the tobacco bills, so we'll see how things go. House Bill 66 is the first one before us. Let me try and bring committee members up to speed on what we've accomplished before. In your packets, we are working from the CS. That was adopted on February, or it's the committee substitute of February 6th, 1989. That's the item before us. We've gone through and adopted amendments 1 through 3. We have amendments 4 through 7 before the committee, and let me review those for you. Amendment number 4 takes us in the direction I think the committee was going with, increasing the number of members from 9 to 11. As you'll remember, the fiscal impact is negligible, and I think Representative Boyer may be able to make a report in a moment on the fiscal note, which is actually less than the last fiscal note that we looked at. The administration, I believe, has signed off on that. Amendment number 5 is the amendment that is the governor shall consider appointing to the commission persons who are under the age of 21. So 4 increases us to 11 members. 5 is the governor shall consider youth members. Number 6 is the tighter language of the governor will appoint two persons under the age of 21 to the commission. Then amendment number 7, so you'll notice that if we were to adopt amendment number 6, it precludes amendment number 4. Amendment number 7 inserts the word poverty on page 2, line 21. So I intend to try and take those in order. We have several, and then we'll also want to discuss the fiscal note. Let me take the first amendment. We do have some people who have signed up to testify on House Bill 66. It had not been my intention this morning to take more public testimony, but since you're here, we can take some very quick and limited public testimony. I don't want to hold up too long the committee discussion. So let's take people in the order they've signed up, and if you could keep it very brief, that would help us expedite the bill's process. Linda Miller?
Yes.
Did you intend to testify?
I would like to.
Okay.
I have a statement I'd like to read. I'm representing myself, but also the community
of Christian. Excuse me, Ms. Miller, could you just join us at the table, then, please? And if your statement is lengthy, what we can do is... Okay, if you could... Okay, it's a short statement,
right.
Then. You're free to read that, and we can make copies of your written testimony for the record.
Okay, thank you. I'm representing the community of Christian women of Northern Light United Church, who drew up a statement, which I will read. The Northern Light United Church community of Christian women support the formation of a permanent children's commission. The state of Alaska funds commissions on fish and game, cosmetology licensing, utilities, aging, and many more. Creation of a children's commission is a morally responsible step because children cannot speak their own needs. Creation of this commission is fiscally responsible because the identification of the needs of children and action on those needs may prevent a lifetime of social service costs. And this has been signed by 45 people. Some men joined us.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
Ms. Miller, thank you very much. Are there any questions for the witness? If not, if you'll provide your written statement to the staff, we'll include it in the official record. Bobby Palmer?
Yes.
Good morning.
I'm here with the Community of Christian Women too, but I also would like to speak just for myself. I work for the Presbyterian Church in the state of Alaska, in southeast Alaska, Alaska Presbytery. And one of the programs that we have in the summer is to bring high school and college age young people here to go out into the villages and work with young people, children and youth. And we work in perhaps 25 to 28 of the more isolated communities around southeast. Always when those young people come back, they reflect the fact that they have been aware that there are a great many needs of the children and the youth in those communities that are not being met. Many of them having to do with alcohol and drug abuse and the consequences of those upon the lives of children, but many other things too. And so it's been impressed upon me that there is a great need, and so I would like to speak in favor of establishing this commission on a permanent basis so that programs can be devised and then also monitored and followed through on, and I think it would be really helpful. So I'd like to speak in favor of this bill.
Ms. Palmer, thank you for coming out this morning. Representative Jacko has a question.
I just had a question. I was wondering if you could tell me what kind of work that these people that you sent out to the villages do. Is it?
It's connected with the church, of course, and it's primarily to operate vacation Bible schools is their main function, but then they also are encouraged to do other kinds of youth ministry and ministry within the community, and to establish one-to-one relationships with children and youth as they can, and to be friends and counselors with them.
Okay. Thank you again, Ms. Palmer. Mm-hmm. Judy Brakel, or Brackel. To be followed by Nancy Eiler. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm speaking for myself. I spent about 5 years from 1980 to 1984 coming up to the legislature a lot to lobby for child support enforcement. And during that time, I realized and was rather appalled to see that there were no organized pressure groups or lobbying efforts for the needs of children. There were for women's organizations. It was in the kind of early or mid-feminist period, and so some of those took up some children's issues, but it was very spotty. And of course, at one point I was on the Governor's Commission for Child Support Enforcement, which was a one-year commission. A lot of the testimony we received was actually from women who were not in favor of child support because this was a dent in their income because their husbands were supporting children from a previous marriage. So I really, not just on the issue of child support, but the many other needs of children, I was appalled at the lack of organized and concerted effort toward children. As a student of anthropology, I had kind of conceived of human society as originally coalescing around the need for caring for and raising helpless children and training them, and it seems that our society has to a large degree forgotten that focus and become a society of adults, taking care of adults. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Nancy Eiler.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm a Juno mother with two young boys, and in hearing about House Bill 66, I thought a lot about how lucky my children are to live in a home with two parents and not have to be in daycare, not subject to abuse, and they had adequate prenatal care and they have adequate health care, and all their needs are being met. But I realize a lot of the children in the state have needs and have home situations that aren't as nice, and so I felt strongly enough about this commission being formed that I came down and wanted to voice my support.
We appreciate you coming. That's all we have signed up to testify on the legislation. Let me check and see, is there anyone else who wished to make a brief comment on House Bill 66? If not, let's move on.
I'd like to, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Okay, please come forward. I'm sorry, sir, I didn't have you signed up. But
well, I really didn't intend to speak, but okay. I feel moved to make one comment. My name is Amos Joe Alter. I'm a 45-year resident of Alaska, and I live here in Juneau. I come from a background of about 50 years of advocacy for the quality of life, shall I say. And I am currently a member of the State Board for Advisory Board for Pioneer Homes. I think the quality of life extends from the beginning to the end. And I would urge Mr. Chairman and members of the committee that you give full consideration and your support to this bill to implement an advocacy for that early part of life. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, let's go to amendment number four. I guess I'm offering the amendment, so I'll move the amendment for discussion purposes. Is there any objection to moving the amendment?
This is four members to hold.
Yes, so the total would be 11. And Mike Nizic is in the audience. Mike, would you come forward, please? Nizic, excuse me. If you'd like to comment on the new fiscal note for us, please.
All right. Mr. Chairman, we met with Representative Boyer and discussed the previous fiscal note that we had submitted. We came to agreement on a few of the areas, and I'll just briefly go over the areas that we considered in reducing. We made some reductions in the travel line items based on the location of the members of the committee, the commission members, the locations. That reduced the travel line item. We also made some adjustments to the administrative staff travel, and we also reluctantly reduced the $8,000 that was originally within the original fiscal note for executive branch members. It's the executive office's feeling that travel is an important part, not only for the public members, but as well as the executive branch members, and they find it was relatively important to have that money in one location. However, we did reduce that out of this fiscal note you have in front of you today. We also reduced approximately $1,000 in the supply line, which overall reduction from the previous fiscal note is 11.6. That's basically where we're at today. Okay.
I want to thank Representative Boyer for working with the administration to get us to a better fiscal note. Do you have any comments?
I would just say that Michael's arms were bent and battered and bruised, but and so there was a little reluctance, but I found it and have found over the years that very accommodating and easy to work with. But the overall fiscal note is reduced, and we actually, because there had been a misprint in the first fiscal note, increased the communication budget as an item there, and actually accommodated the additional members' travel, and still came up with the overall reduction. I think it's something we could certainly live within. So.
Are there any further questions for Mike? If not, thank you very much. Okay, with everyone's comfort level, I hope raised over the fiscal impact of amendment number four, I'll see if there's any objection, any discussion of the amendment. Is there any objection to amendment number four? If not, amendment number four is adopted, increasing the size of the commission from 9 to 11 members. Okay. Those have been adopted into the previous, or those are contained in the committee substitute before us now. Amendments number five and six. Amendment number five is the governor shall consider appointing to the commission persons who are under the age of 21. As I pointed out before, amendment number six requires the governor to add two persons under the age of 21 to the commission. So I'd like to, before either amendment is moved, have some discussion about our approach here and see, try and take the temperature of the committee on this point. Anyone care to start? Representative Davis.
I think the committee heard my concerns earlier, and I would be much more comfortable with the governor
may appoint rather than the one that requires. I think it gives some latitude. I think the governor is going to obviously take the large public interest issue of having young people on this commission to heart. I don't see how he could help it, and I think that allows some latitude in structuring the commission to the best possible advantage. So I would support number 5.
Anyone else have a feeling? Representative Furness?
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, a debate on this amendment prior, my suggestion, I support the person number 21 and suggest that the governor may look at a college freshman, a person who has not been that far removed from the K-12 program as an alternative. Mm-hmm. There was some concern of exposing a person of the age to all of the ramifications of the committee of the commission. However, I think it's still appropriate. I don't know if we want to do that in an intent statement, or at least the records will reflect that. At least my thinking on the issue.
Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Furness. I think it's important to have some people between the ages of 18 and 21 on the commission. I wouldn't object to limiting the low age to 16 as a way of dealing with those young people who, I guess for lack of a better phrase, should be in school. But if it comes down to a vote, I'm going to vote for the mandatory rather than the discretionary. And I just think it's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
If we're going to give our indications here of how we're going to vote, I would vote for more discretion and flexibility for the governor and would intend to vote for 5 and against 6.
I might as well get you two and then we can just decide. <what that means. laughs>
Well, I am keeping a score sheet here. As you can see, as you can see, I'm shying away from trying to bring this down to a hardcore vote. I was hoping that we could achieve some consensus here, and I heard Representative Gall suggesting a floor on the age of the youth participants if we were to go with the mandatory language of Amendment Number 6. We are missing one committee member who had some feelings on this point, but I guess that's his choice not to be here. But anyone else care to express their opinion? I don't
take a vote.
Let's vote.
The since my name is on Amendment Number 5, I will. I was thinking that might give some people a clue where, after wrestling with this issue, where I'd come down. My name does not appear on Amendment Number 6. So, I'm going to move Amendment Number 5 and open to see if there's any more discussion on that one.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Gall?
As a way of, let's question.
Okay. All in favor of Amendment Number 5, please raise your right hand.
Right hand.
All opposed?
I'm a good guy.
Amendment Number 5 has been adopted.
Unanimous consent.
Well, no, we're not going to
by unanimous consent.
By unanimous consent. Okay. The next item before us is Amendment Number 7, inserting the word poverty on page 2, line 21, after the word nutrition. And I'll put that amendment before us. Is there any discussion of Amendment Number 7? Give members just a moment. I don't think there will be. Is there any objection to Amendment Number 7? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Furness, did you, if members do have any concerns about expressing intent on through the process, please let us know here in the next few minutes before we move this bill on. Because we've asked the governor, the language is a little stronger than you expressed, Representative Davis. It's not that the governor may, but the governor shall. He will consider. I mean, he needs to go through the process here of reviewing potential candidates for that for those positions. So, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's fine. I just didn't want to get into a bind where the effectiveness of the committee might have been lessened because of lack of someone that was the right age that could be plugged in there that was really going to be effective and, or something like that. And I figure with a little bit more flexibility. Sorry, Representative Gall, I don't intend for it not to have those people. I think they'll be there. I just wanted to have the flexibility, and I'm still comfortable with it with more stronger language than what I might have originally proposed, but with less time.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Gall.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Representative Davis, Mr. Chairman. I guess my look that I just gave for those on the teleconference was the reference to effectiveness. As a former child myself, I always felt that I was able to, quite frankly, I think I could think better when I was a child than I can today. I don't think that the effectiveness is the issue. Maybe the ability to attend would be something I could relate to. I feel that if we can get the kids there, we would do very well to listen to them closely. Through listening to them, even if we don't always agree with their conclusions, make the commission more effective than if we pretend we know what's good for people other than ourselves.
Representative Davis.
Just one brief comment. I don't disagree with anything Representative Gall said, and I would hope, however, that in addition to whomever is on this commission, that the commission intends to spend a lot of time listening to the youth in our state, because they are the ones who do have a better idea about what their needs are than we do.
Okay, with that, is there any further discussion on the bill itself? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion on the legislation, including the revised fiscal note. Representative Gall.
I so move. I'm sorry. Mr. Okay. Chairman, I move that we pass this bill from committee with individual recommendations with the revised fiscal note, the amended CS for House Bill 66, Hess.
Okay. Committee substitute for House Bill number 66, Hess amended, moves out of committee with individual recommendations. With that, Carla and everyone else, thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, they say that.
The next item before us will be House Bill 80, increasing the excise tax on cigarettes. There is a committee substitute in your packets that will need to be adopted in a moment. I'd like to ask Representative Grunberg if he'd like to do so to speak to his proposed addition to the cigarette tax bill.
Yeah. Are we on teleconference still?
Yes, we are.
Okay. This is in Section 1, Mr. Chairman. It will allow Sections 1 and 2. It will allow municipalities to specifically have a sales tax on cigarettes and tobacco products that exceeds 6%, which is the normal cap on sales taxes. and it's basically a local option. We've had testimony that a number of cities in the lower 48 have done this, and it's frankly a tool that may be useful, particularly in this time of declining state revenues, to raise additional funds, and it may help to finance at the local level some of their health department efforts, like at the Anchorage municipality, for example.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, I'm sorry, Mr. Kronberg, through the chair, could you just sort of start that over again? I have the bill, I have the CS, and I'm not sure what parts of this.
Yeah, it's sections 1 and 2.
Oh, okay. And would you be kind enough, just seeing my old age, I'm slowing down here. Could you just kind of, kind of repeat what this impact is?
It's just a local option, allowing them to have a local cigarette tax that exceeds the normal 6% cap. If you look at section 1, the normal 6% cap on a sales tax under Title 29, the normal sales tax cap is 6%, and this allows a tobacco tax in excess of that, and the guts of the amendment are in section 2. Section 1 simply conforms the cap section to section 2, and section 2 says that the levy doesn't apply to sales taxes on cigarettes and tobacco products.
I see. So then the effect would be that any increase in the sales tax would not work against the other sales tax provisions of the municipality, or would it allow them to impose their own cigarette tax as well in excess of their 6% limitation?
Both.
Thank you very much. Local communities are currently allowed to impose this kind of tax. So.
But the cap is 6%, and this lets them exceed the cap for the purposes of this particular tax.
Anyone else have, committee members have comments on this addition to the legislation? I spoke to Representative Grunberg about this. We consulted about it, and I think it's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
For the purposes of discussion, I move the Chenoweth-Deerdorf 222-89 CS.
Is there any objection to the motion? If not, committee substitute is the item before us currently. Let me check and see if there's any testimony. I guess, Steve Kettle, are you there on the teleconference line?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here in Anchorage, standing by.
Mr. Kettle, was it your intention to testify on the committee substitute before us, or are you just available to answer questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just available to answer questions. Okay. I have not seen the committee substitute, but it does not sound like it impacts the state cigarette tax. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're allowing, not a local option in the sense of voters taking action, but an option for local governments to impose a cigarette tax beyond the cap of 6 mils.
Okay, I understand the amendment. Thank you.
Is there anyone here in Juneau who would like to testify on the existing tax or the addition that we've made to the in the committee substitute? Is there any further committee discussion? Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, can anyone tell me what a pack of cigarettes will cost with this tax that we're proposing on it? Does anybody have any idea how much a pack of kit cigarettes cost, like out of a vending machine?
Oh, I couldn't tell you the price.
But how much?
I think they're about $1.50 in the machine. Okay, so. I think this puts about 20 cents.
Yeah, there would be, we're increasing the state share of the tax on cigarettes from 16 cents to 25 cents per pack.
Mm-hmm.
That puts us, moves us from the lower third among states for cigarette taxation to the top third. I believe that's correct. Staff will correct me if that is correct.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just had some interest in raising it even higher.
Mr. Chairman?
I know. There has been interest expressed along those lines. Representative Gall?
Why not? Is there some objection on the committee to raising it higher? Because
I would think like about a 50-cent pack tax on cigarettes would be really good.
Well, 16 would take it to 25.
Well, I'd like to know where the objections are, if there are objections in the committee, because I'm serious. Representative Gall, there's no one other than some of the tobacco interests, I think, that I've found that have an objection to that. When I proposed the increase, I didn't choose a low number, I didn't choose a high number, I tried to choose an achievable number. And you may be more optimistic than I am about where we could increase the level and get it through the process. I have noted in the state of California that they passed, through public initiative, an enormous increase in the cigarette tax. The voters supported that. That those new monies were dedicated for health purposes. And maybe Rocky could help me out. They were dedicated for some purpose, and I believe it was health purposes.
That's right.
And the voters approved that. Ms. Plotnick is saying that that's correct. Of course, these funds are undedicated, and that's always something that gives a bit, these kinds of measures a bit of a problem as they flow through the process, because people question whether they will be used for a good purpose or just for the, well, the general purposes of government. I consider those mostly good purposes. Some people don't, but I have no particular objection to an increase. I'm trying to keep the bill in a manageable form and in one that will be able to pass this legislature. But I'm open for discussion. Representative Grunberg.
My recollection, when we upped the cigarette tax in, I believe it was 1985 or 86 in the 14th legislature, and passed the Adams bill, that Section 2 of that bill upped the tax. But Section 1 was an intent. And I think that that intent was that the funds be used for to promote wellness was the language. Unusual language, but it was to promote wellness. And I think that that intent language would still apply even though we're upping it again. And frankly, we certainly could, if that's the committee's desire, send a letter of intent along with it that we intend that the intent language that already is in place certainly apply to the increase as well.
Well, one important point, since we've adopted this committee substitute that allows the local taxing authority to go beyond the level of six, I guess if we were to increase the cigarette tax way beyond what's proposed here in this bill, there would be not that much incentive to increasing it at the local level. Now, you know, an assumption behind my legislation here and the increase I've proposed is that there's a compelling state interest in having a reasonable level of taxation on what's essentially a dangerous drug, the drug of nicotine, that a number of people are addicted to and has, you know, proven, documented serious health consequences. And so there's a state interest. I believe there's also, my general philosophy is that sales taxes are appropriately applied at the local level. That's one of the reasons why I personally oppose a statewide sales tax, because that's an option available to a local government. And so I wouldn't want to, by raising the state tax to a significantly higher level, preclude local governments from increasing their tax and funding some of their local health promotion efforts and health prevention projects and health services through local taxes on this substance. Representative Grunberg.
I believe, and we can get a legal opinion if we need to, but I believe that the tax caps, such as Proposition 24, are not, do not apply to these kinds of sales taxes. And for the municipality of Anchorage, this would be a way of getting around the normal tax cap of Proposition 24. And it may provide additional flexibility that we really haven't talked about, because there's nothing in the municipal charter in Anchorage that would prevent either the imposition of a sales tax or certainly the increase. Yeah. We can get a legal opinion on that if you have a desire.
Representative Bell.
I'm just curious if you could tell me what the reason was that we use the millage value rather than a fixed number of cents or something for the tax.
Well, that was the suggestion I received from the Department of Revenue. And maybe Mr. Kettle could speak to that.
That's the way it is now.
How much is it now? Well, if you look at the bill, Mr. Chairman, you'll see it's now 5.5.
We're just using...
No. Oh, I see. You mean that using a mill rate is the way it is now. But
right. Yes.
Why are we doing that is my question. And if there is someone who can answer that, I'd like to know.
Why do we assess the tax based on a millage formula?
Yeah, it just seems so simple to say that on every pack of cigarettes there's going to be so many cents of tax. Why are we basing it on the retail sale price?
Mr. Kettle, if I could call on you to answer Representative Gall's question.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the only response that I could give you is that although it's common for a pack of cigarettes to have 20 in it, there are many other types of cigarettes that have less than 20 in a pack, some of your specialty items. So since the tax is, if my math's correct, still less than a penny per cigarette, I think it makes sense to keep it on a millage rate.
I guess my question is, would this be like an incentive then for selling, if it were 10 cents a pack or something, this would be an incentive for putting more cigarettes in a pack? I just assume charge them the same 10 cents for the 5 cigarette pack as the 20 cigarette pack. What difference does it make?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gall, I guess that's your prerogative to choose to tax it any way you want. The current system has it on the millage, though, and the most simple amendment would be to keep that system in place.
Thank you very much. That simplicity is certainly a value to be considered, and I appreciate the comment.
Okay. Representative Jacko.
I'm wondering how this applies to just tobacco for like pipe smokers. Does it apply to that too?
No, this would not. We're increasing, or would be increasing, the tax just on cigarettes. Last year there was there was legislation to impose a tax on chewing tobacco, cigars, and pipe tobacco, loose tobacco, all other forms of tobacco other than cigarettes, which though all of those items were previous to last year when that bill passed. There was no tax on those items. Smokeless, all those tobacco users who used any other product other than cigarettes paid nothing to the public treasury. That changed last year. Someone will have to remind me what the total tax is on those items.
Other tobacco products. I guess, Mr. Chairman, I guess my question would be, is it similar or what we do is what we're doing here? Are we providing an incentive for these high school kids to switch from cigarettes to pipe? Or
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Grimberg.
To answer that question tangentially, we originally offered a choice of two amendments for the stuff that we've added at my request. One would have simply, on lines 19 and 20, had been cigarettes only. We added the phrase and tobacco products so that it would be a uniform at the local level. I mean, at least potentially give them a little greater choice. They could do either or both. This isn't answering your question directly, but I wanted to also to point out to the committee that we did consider just doing it on cigarettes, and if anybody has any heartburn, it could just be limited to cigarettes, but I recommend that we allow that option for other tobacco products too.
So the local community would have the option of raising taxes on at the local level on more than just cigarettes. So,
and I suspect most communities, I don't know, maybe Mr. Kornick or somebody could say, or Ms. Blotnick Weller could say, whether local communities presently tax only cigarettes or other tobacco products in Alaska.
I'm not aware.
So it may, if they're not taxing cigars or whatever now, it may provide a considerable additional source of revenue to the local communities.
Any further questions or discussion?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, my major concern is not so much the additional revenue that it generates, but the incentive or disincentive that it gives the people who are smoking. And if there's a different tax on cigarettes than there is on other tobacco, other products, it seemed like it would just switch to something else, and we're not accomplishing anything.
It's, and Mr. Chairman, it's a different rate system set up. And I don't remember the figures. There is a problem that we should bring to the committee, though. I don't think I've discussed with you, and I don't want to cut off your question, but something that you need to know about. And may I mention?
Certainly.
Okay. There's a U.S. Supreme Court case called the Bella Hess case. Did this ring a bell with anybody here?
No, sir.
Okay. It's a real important.
Not Alger Hiss, we're talking
Bella Hess. H-E-S-S. And it basically prohibits a state from imposing a sales tax on purchases made mail order out of state. And it's had terrific impact on other states. We don't have a statewide sales tax, but we have a few types of taxes that are sales tax, specific sales tax, this being one of them. And what people are able to do is basically escape, in this case, both the state and local sales tax by ordering tobacco products and cigarettes out of state. And in the one sense, that Supreme Court ruling, which says you cannot tax, the receiving state can't tax the sale. They can tax it in the state where the product is sold, but they can't tax it in the receiving state. And what this does, in one sense, is it makes it more of an incentive for consumers, lowers the price to do a mail order business, but it has a terrific effect on the taxing authority and also a disincentive to buy from local merchants. And the National Conference of State Legislatures is quite concerned about this. And it's never come up in this legislature before because we have so few sales taxes, but it will definitely have an impact on this particular state tax and also on these local taxes that may now generate some money for local governments. And I don't know if this committee at any point would want to consider that, but a number of state legislatures are urging the federal government to pass legislation allowing the taxation of imported stuff so that we would be able to particularly use it for tobacco products in this state. And the committee might well want to consider joining in that national effort. It will help local merchants, it will help local authorities, and it will help the state in collecting these particular taxes. And I'm real concerned about the Bella Hess case myself.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. That is something we may want to...
if you would like, I will research that and determine whether we maybe have a House Joint Resolution urging the Congress pass that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd encourage you to please bring that information before the committee.
Okay.
I intend here in just a moment to set this bill aside and to move on to the licensing bill and hopefully come back to the excise tax before the end of the meeting. Representative Gall, did you have a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would like to get this excise tax bill out of committee and moving. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions if I could, and I hope you'll forgive my ignorance here. I just like to follow up first on Mr. Jacko's question. How does this compare with our existing taxes on chewing tobacco and pipe tobacco and cigars? Did that information get to you yet?
That information is on its way from staff.
Okay.
And as you know, we just imposed that
I understand.
Tax.
I understand.
So
I don't want to delay it. I'll wait for the information.
There won't be adequate information about tax receipts or...
No, I just wanted to know what per purchase information. Mm-hmm. If you go in and buy a little tin of chewing tobacco, I was curious to know what the tax was, but I can wait for that. The other question was this. Again, following up on Representative Davis's question, on a pack of cigarettes that costs a dollar, pre-tax costs a dollar, the tax that would be imposed on that dollar pack of cigarettes would be how much, 10 cents?
No, currently the state share of the tax, there's a federal tax on cigarettes as well.
I'm talking about what's covered here in this bill.
The state share is currently 16 cents. It will go up to 25 cents per pack.
16 cents based on what?
The current, I'm sorry, based on what? The millage, the current millage level brings in 16 cents per pack to the state of Alaska.
I guess what I'm asking is, how does this millage level work? I'm just trying to understand what it means.
Well, the millage level, I once again will defer to Mr. Kettle to explain the technicalities of millage.
May I, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
Mr. Kettle, could you just very briefly, because we're running out of time on this, assuming that a pack of cigarettes costs a dollar, what's the tax on it? Are you there, Mr. Kettle?
I'm talking as loud as I can.
Okay, that I heard you say I'm talking as loud as I can.
Excellent. The current millage rate mills, 5.5 mills from the 85 amendment, 1.5 mills in prior law, and 2.5 mills that goes to the school fund. So we have a total of 8 mills presently on the books. 8 mills, or 0.008 times 20 cigarettes, works out to be 16 cents per pack.
So you're saying that it is 10...
effective of the price of a pack of cigarettes.
Community members who have concerns.
Okay, I get it. So it is 8 mils, or 10 mils, meaning 1 cent per cigarette. Is that correct?
That's correct.
8 mils is a little less, but 10 mils is 1 cent per cigarette tax, is what we're talking about here. So 20 cents per pack would be the tax. Thank you very much, Mr. Kettle.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add just a little bit of information that I think the committee is searching for that I have at my disposal here. The tax on other tobacco products, the smokeless tobacco tax, is currently 25% of the wholesale price. That price, of course, can vary throughout the state or throughout the year, depending upon a lot of other economic factors, I suppose. It's levied at on the wholesale price because those products are sold in various shapes and sizes, often by the ounce. That tax raises somewhere between $500,000 and $700,000 a year.
Representative Jacko, did you get your question answered?
Yes.
How much and why? It's 25% of the wholesale price.
Mm-hmm. Mr.
Chairman, Representative Gall?
Yeah, I'm satisfied with that information. I don't feel we should tamper with that at this time, and I appreciate Mr. Kettle and Mr. Chairman your assistance. Mr. Chairman, will you entertain an amendment on this bill?
Not at this time. We're going to set this bill aside and take up the next item before us.
Thank you. Then I'd just like to state for the record that it will be my intent when it comes back to move 15 mils.
Okay. Representative Brown, could you join us at the table, please? The next item before us is House Bill 141, Licensing Retail Tobacco Sales, and if you'd care to give a report on the subcommittee work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The subcommittee met with representatives of the Department of Commerce and Revenue to attempt to determine whether it would make more sense administratively to try to impose this requirement as a feature of the business licensing requirement that we already have. And we concluded that was a suggestion that came up at the public testimony that was taken, and we concluded that is a good idea, that it can be implemented through the Department of Commerce as an add-on to the existing business license. That is the main change. There are a couple of others. I'll briefly summarize the changes made between the prior draft and the draft proposed substitute that's in front of you now. It moves the requirement from revenue to the Department of Commerce. It raises the fee from $10 to $25. It dropped the reference to other devices, and it shortened the length of suspension of a license from 5 years to 1 year. And someone else can speak up if I've missed anything. I believe those are the major changes that were incorporated into the committee substitute. So just briefly, here's how this would work. When a business license comes up for renewal, the Department of Commerce would send or notify the retailer of their requirement to obtain a tobacco certification. The retailer would be able to do this in one transaction, writing a check to the Department of Commerce for the business license and for this endorsement. And then, if there were a conviction in court of the statute that prohibits selling cigarettes to a minor, the court would notify the Department of Commerce that such a conviction had occurred, and then Commerce would not issue them a new license or would revoke their license, and that's covered in Section 1 of the bill. Then the Department of Commerce will notify Revenue of who the licensed retailers are. And Revenue has the authority to suspend or revoke license endorsements if distributors are selling to unlicensed retailers. And we think that is a strong feature because it will provide some self-enforcing mechanism. There will be an incentive for the wholesalers not to sell to unlicensed retailers. And so I believe that's what it does. That's a summary of what it does. Section 3 deals with the Department of Commerce and their obligations and requirements under this proposal. So thank you very much for the work on this. I think it's a better bill than the original, and I urge your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Representative Brown. I agree the work session was very productive, and I think we made some good improvements. Representative Boyer.
Thank you. In the subcommittee process, did you talk with retailers at all, like mom-and-pop stores or 7-Eleven types or people who do a lot of business at the counter in sales of cigarettes and tobacco products? Were those people brought into the loop?
No.
We actually, I guess there was no one present at the work session, but we did hear from one small retailer from Lake
Michumina,
who made comments and suggestions about the bill. But
In fact, that suggestion that we don't want a bunch of more bureaucracy and a whole other requirement was what led us in the direction of looking at making it an adjunct to the business license.
We should let her know that she did have an impact on state policy. So. Representative Davis?
Go ahead. I was just going to repeat what you said.
Okay. First. All right. Thank you. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick question. I can see how this works for a business, an ordinary business, but there are cigarette machines all over the place, like in the ferry terminal in Ketchikan. Who's responsible for sale of cigarettes from a machine in the ferry terminal in Ketchikan, which is a state-operated facility? I know that those people, I believe they are licensed at the retail, I mean at the wholesale level, but perhaps, Mr. Kettle, are you still with us online?
Yes, I am.
Could you respond to that question about the vending machines and where they fit into this scheme of things?
Yes, the Department of Revenue does currently license vending machine operators that sell cigarettes. I'm looking for what our tax rate is here. Not sure that it matters much, but I believe it's $25 per year, and it's issued to a vending machine operator for all machines that they would have out and about in the community.
And I'm sorry, Representative.
So my assumption would be that if that business, if the vending machine owner required a business license, that they would require this retail certification, even though there's already a requirement at the wholesale level. And somebody can correct me if they think that's not correct.
Representative Davis?
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I guess my question is, if one of the premises of this legislation is then to come down on people who are selling tobacco to minors, I have a concern anyway that, and I know that the attempt was made to try to have not have cigarette vending machines in places where minors could get at them without having any adult supervision over the process. Well, in the case of my example again, the ferry terminal in Ketchikan, where the people that are working behind the counter in the terminal certainly can't see that vending machine, and a five-year-old could go get cigarettes out of it, for all I know. But I guess my question is, who's responsible for seeing that minors are not able to get at those vending machines? If the person who has the license is totally removed from the process, obviously they have the license, they put the vending machines all over the place, and they're not there when the cigarettes are being sold like an owner of a business is. Representative Ellis, that was you were real involved in that. Can you explain that?
Yes. The legislation that passed last year by Senator Fakes, it was the legislation that I grafted my tobacco product tax onto. When her bill came over, and it made it all the way through the process with a prohibition against unsupervised tobacco vending machines. And a number of those have been removed around the state. Not all of them have. And if you're aware of a situation where there is a cigarette vending machine that is unsupervised, not in the line of sight of an adult in that business establishment or government agency, I think the businesses are quite aware of it, because they had a vendor's lobbyist here who testified all the way through the process. And but there were probably government agencies and some other folks that probably aren't quite aware of that, since there wasn't that much of an personal economic impact on some of those establishments as opposed to private sector businesses. So if you're aware of such a situation, we should report that to the Department of Revenue. Representative Gall?
Is there a cigarette machine in this building?
There used to be.
It used to be next to the unsupervised juice machine at
yes.
the bottom of the stairs. Right?
There used to be a cigarette. Actually, that was the impetus for, or one of the things that emotionalized the debate, was the fact that legislators would walk through on their way from this building to the court building and observe very young citizens who were waiting for the school bus or for the people mover accessing nicotine here in the Capitol building. And so after the passage of that bill, that unsupervised tobacco machine became illegal in the state of Alaska. Representative Brown, did you have further comments? Or Representative Grunberg?
I have a couple comments. The bill goes to Judiciary Committee next, I note. And I think that we can address these in Judiciary, but I just want to bring up at least what I see here. And let me just go through just eyeballing the issues as I see
okay.
them.
Okay. Representative Grunberg, we have three witnesses on the teleconference to get
well,
in.
Well, we can do this later then.
Okay. Yeah. If there's things that we can work on in Judiciary or other issues.
I just wanted to bring them to the attention and the record.
Okay.
But we can wait till after.
Okay. We may be able to get that in. Let's go to John Creed in Kotzebue.
Okay. Thank you. Committee members, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. My name is John Creed, and I live here in Kotzebue, and I'm testifying in favor of House Bill 141, an act relating to the retail sale of tobacco and tobacco products, which would, of course, require a license or such. I am a community co-facilitator of Tobacco Free Alaska 2000, and our work, I believe, is having a tremendous impact on tobacco use across the state, but I also believe that we are not forcing this change, but we're only following a trend that the majority of Alaskans feel particularly strong about. Out here in Kotzebue, for example, just in the past year, the following organizations have gone absolutely smoke-free. Kotzebue Hospital, Kotzebue Schools, although not the district office, Chukchi College and Manilik Association, the offices of NANA Regional Corporation, and the local Alaska Airlines Terminal. I will remind you that this social revolution is in a region where nicotine addiction is drastically higher than the statewide rate, and unscientific figures estimate that as many as half of all junior high students in Kotzebue smoke cigarettes or use tobacco of some kind. So where do they get their tobacco, given that you must be 19 years old in Alaska to buy or be given tobacco? Well, we have a little store in Kotzebue that we understand sells tobacco to just about anybody who goes in there and wants it. And the police say they can't do anything about it. And this is a small town, so it's, you can't get children to participate in a sting operation, or they'd be quite ostracized. So licensing law. Local law enforcement would have something to pull if this store or any other store in town continues to sell tobacco to minors. And nicotine, remember, is the gateway drug in our nation's incredible love-hate affair with drug abuse. One thing also I'd like to say, I understand that the Tobacco Institute and Philip Morris have hired some pretty slick lobbyists, Wes Coiner and Ray Gillespie, I believe, with a tidy sum of $70,000 just to lobby in this legislative session against any tobacco use legislation that's going to come down the pike. And I understand that Mr. Coiner is a particularly smooth operator, but I also understand he doesn't often testify publicly, but rather works quietly behind the scenes. On this bill, if these two gentlemen are listening, I'd like to ask them if they are working against this bill, if you'll be able to live with yourselves knowing that our children will have an easier chance to get hooked on nicotine if this bill fails or other bills fail. I understand you're well paid for your efforts, and Tobacco-Free Alaska 2000 is but a ragtag band of private citizens. And although we are in every major community in the state, we are not paid for our efforts, but we just believe that this is such a serious drug problem in our society that we're trying to do everything we can. And we're quite disturbed that the tobacco industry has decided to come into Alaska with some big guns and work against this legislation, because it's so very important for the future of our children. Thank you very much.
Mr. Creed, thank you for your testimony. The next person on the list is Lynn Moore in Anchorage, and then to be followed by Kitty Liu. And I'd have to ask everyone to please keep their comments brief so we can have some more committee discussion and possibly final action. Lynn Moore, if you're there, please go ahead quickly.
Okay, thank you. My name is Lynn Moore, and I am a concerned parent of a 13 and a 15-year-old. I'm concerned about the availability of tobacco products, cigarettes, as well as smokeless tobacco. Both of my teenagers are just as easily influenced by tobacco and peer pressure as the next teenager, probably even more so. I support the State Bill 339 wholeheartedly, and to enforce that, I encourage you to pass House Bill 141. With the passing of House Bill 141, licensing the retailers will give them much more incentive to monitor tobacco sales through the machines and over the counter. It's keeping them the pressure to smoke, dip, and chew. Giving them information and direction is my job. Supporting me with State Bill 339 and enforcing it with House Bill 141 will help them make the right decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Moore.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
My name is Kitty. I am an advocate for the American Lung Association. I'm also trained as a biochemist. I can testify about the tax reform, and I just want to make a short. The cigarette smoking and the use of tobacco products have been proven again and again over the past 20 years by numerous health professionals to be very dangerous drug addiction rather than a frivolous habit. Our Surgeon General Alfred Cope characterized the tobacco use as a 3D habit. What it means is a habit that eventually leads to disease, disability, and death. And a nicotine addiction resulting from the use of tobacco products may be as hazardous or more than alcohol addiction. Both the tobacco product and alcoholic beverages are some of the very few products that are sold in the market that can kill and injure when used or intended to use. The sales of cigarettes is a $30 billion industry as of 1985. It's getting bigger. In the state of Alaska alone in 1988, the sales are more than $8 million. There is a retail licensing for alcoholic beverage, and I think it's logical in the sense that cigarette sales should be regulated similarly. I really strongly support HB 141 requiring retail licensing for tobacco products. Thank you.
Ms. Liu, thank you very much. Representative Brown, contained in the packets is this amendment. Is this an outdated... This is an old...
A stale amendment.
I believe that was an amendment to the original.
Okay.
I
Committee members could just set that aside.
Burn it, it's smoked.
Get rid of it, or recycle it.
Recycle it.
Recycle it, good.
This is one, I think. Is this the...
Yes, that's the one that's not applicable.
I believe we're yet to adopt the committee substitute. Or did we do that a moment ago? No, we haven't yet done that. So I'll entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute. Representative Boyer?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt CS for House Bill number 141 Hess.
Without objection?
That's the Ford 3-1 version?
Yes, Ford 3-189. That's the item before us. Is there any further discussion? Representative Grunberg?
Yeah, since this does go to my committee next, I'm just flagging some issues so the committee knows that we haven't overlooked them and Representative Graham can deal with them. In Section 1, I don't know whether that's a realistic burden to place on the court system to forward a record of each person who holds a business license endorsement. I'm not sure that the court system will know whether a person holds a business license endorsement. And normally, the court system doesn't get involved in forwarding stuff like that to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. That's something that I will want to deal with in judiciary. The second issue is a constitutional issue and also a policy issue that I think is more appropriately dealt with in judiciary. And that is the question whether a manufacturer, and I'm going through the bill here in Section 2, whether a manufacturer, distributor, or wholesale distributor who sells something to either a non-licensed retailer or a retailer whose license endorsement has been suspended or revoked, whether you can revoke somebody's license or you should on a policy basis be able to revoke their license because they may sell without any knowledge. There's no requirement that they knowingly or do this in a reckless manner. And a person could, let's say the buyer, a retailer, could have recently had their license revoked and that be completely unknown to the distributor. And we'll look at that in judiciary. And the same issue of under subsection B of page 3, of section 3, there's no requirement that there be the knowing sale, I don't think. But I want to take a look at that. Those are my issues. And also a concept that I mentioned to Representative Brown, and this may be something for this committee to consider, and I haven't really thought about it, but to allow an open, a local option for a community to ban the sale of tobacco products if they wish. I'm not sure that there is an option now that would allow a local community to impose basically a local ban. They can certainly do it on the sale of alcoholic beverages, but there's going to come a time when at least some communities may want to ban these products. And I don't know that they can do that under state law. It's a novel concept. I'm not going to offer it as an amendment, but just to throw it out.
Representative Grunberg, is that a ploy to make Mr. Coiner come out of his shell there?
I would
be enough to provoke his testimony, but...
I don't know that it's an idea whose time has come or that it's appropriate. For example, I can see a community, a small community, that has a terrific product with sale of chewing tobacco to minors might ban the sale of chewing tobacco or something like that. I don't know. And I haven't given it any thought, but this is just something I'm sort of throwing out. That's more in the purview of this committee than the Judiciary Committee.
That's something I don't mean to make light of at all. We
I'm not just trying to walk by you either.
No, and we won't consider that suggestion in the context of this bill, but it is one that you may want to present to us in a more formal way.
I think society may have to go a ways before they decide whether they would or wouldn't want to do it, but just something of an idea.
Is there anyone else who wishes to comment on this legislation or any more committee discussion before I entertain a motion? Mr. Burns?
might, for the record. My name is Randall Burns, Director of Division of Occupational Licensing. Just want to make a comment. There's not a fiscal note in your packet. We'll do one afterwards, but if you would adopt this committee substitute. But wanted to just mention that basically the expenses involved in this program will be minimal. They'll just involve printing costs, things of that nature, basically. Won't be any personal services, and the fee that's being charged would generate additional revenue to the state. It depends on how many persons are currently would seek a license under this, depending what the fiscal note would be, but it would have some benefit. Under revenues estimate of 1,300 people, it'd be 32,000 or, and I think there are considerably more people who would seek such an endorsement. So you probably could generate, even doubling that figure, it'd be 62,000. And I don't think our expenses would even go to 5,000 if they go that much. So it really won't definitely be a positive fiscal note.
Thank you very much. Representative Grunberg?
Just one other thing. In fact, giving out this memo on the Bella Hess case, and it appears that Jack Chenoweth legal counsel is saying that you can get around the Bella Hess decision. Let me give you a copy of this. But you can get around the Bella Hess decision by calling it a license or imposing it on the person themselves rather than the selling establishment. And if so, that's a novel way of getting around a very thorny problem that maybe we want to consider in other contexts. I just wanted to throw that out.
Ms. Plotnick-Weller, a brief comment?
Thanks. For the record, I'm Rocky Plotnick-Weller, and I'm here today as the President-Elect of the American Lung Association of Alaska. We want to go on record in support of House Bill 141, and I would like to echo John Creed's statement that this the growing trend for people being concerned about smoking, especially smoking among our youth, is true, and as some evidence I have with me, January 1989 issue, Journal of the American Medical Association, the whole issue is devoted to smoking. There are some articles about smoking in youth. And the February 1989 Journal, the American Journal of Public Health Association, also the whole thing is on tobacco and health. As a final comment, I just want to say that I have the follow-up report, a study done by the Center for Alcohol and Addiction Studies here in Alaska that took a look at use among our young people of different drugs, and 22% of the youth surveyed reported that they had smoked by the age of 13, and that was a survey that had been administered different regions of the state, 10 school districts to kids in 7th through 12th grades. So with that, thank you very much for allowing me to speak in support of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Any further comments on the bill? If not, Representative Grunberg?
I'm raising another issue here, because there are a lot of things going on here, and I want the committee to be aware. On line 21 of page 2, it basically says if you're convicted of selling cigarettes to a minor, your license must be suspended, shall suspend. Doesn't give any discretion to the department. And that's something I'll bring up in judiciary, too. But I want the committee to be aware of the word chalice.
Yeah, you're touching at the heart of the legislation there. Representative Brown may want to make a comment.
Well, it would seem to me that any mitigating circumstances or that the court is really the proper place to sort that out. All we're saying is after a conviction has been made in court, it's an automatic thing. You know, Commerce then just suspends the license. But I don't really understand, you know, what your concern is. I guess I would have some concern about trying to make it a discretionary thing where they would have to make some kind of judgment as to, you know, whether it was appropriate or not appropriate. But I don't really understand what your problem with that is.
It's a policy call, and I just want to think about it and call it the detention.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I want to think about it.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. My concern is to move the bill along, and I'll entertain a motion. Representative Boyer?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out CS for 141 Hess with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion? If not, so ordered. Representative Brown, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
I'm sorry to be popping up here on time, but we've got a good article on that Bella Hess decision that Mark has, and I'll distribute that also to the committee so you can see the impact of that decision. I'll try to get that distributed so you have it next time.
Okay. Thank you. Could committee staff please try and go retrieve Representative Gall? Let's go back to the excise tax in the few moments we have remaining. Representative Gall is going to put forward an amendment to increase the tax. I think I expressed myself before about having picked a sort of a middle ground here for the tax increase that I'm proposing and allow discretion to the local governments. I don't object to Representative Gall's amendment, and we'll leave it to the discretion of the committee as to whether we'll increase the tax or not. Representative Grunberg.
I would just like, if I can, to put something on the record. When Representative Gall introduced his amendment to the Youth Commission bill, I really didn't vote. I would like to indicate that I would have supported that amendment that failed. And I'd like the record to reflect that.
Is there any discussion on the tax increase or the amendment to increase the increase? Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, in the absence of Representative Gall, I would be happy to move that we increase the excise tax to 15%, 15 mils rather than 10.
Okay, Representative Gall has some figures here of just where that would take us. So let's hold on just a moment. Let's, if you could hold your amendment. I believe that would take us, we wouldn't be the highest state.
We'd be within the top few.
Yeah.
30.
Okay. Okay. Hang on just a moment. I'm going to rustle through his file here. And sure, go ahead.
I'm a little bit concerned about this. What the effect may well be, the practical effect, with the CS may be to divert those monies potentially from the locality, which will increase the local tax base if they're going to adopt this local option, to the state. And I would prefer to leave it where it is and encourage the municipalities to use this as a method of increasing their tax base. And I have a selfish reason for doing this, because in Anchorage, we are stuck at the local level with Proposition 24, which severely limits our ability to raise revenue. And with state revenues going down, this may provide a very palatable tool for the municipality of Anchorage to raise some money. And it would get the money directly to the local government rather than getting it into this large morass we call the state of Alaska. And I would urge you to consider that. I would have no problem with maybe bringing that concept up in a year or two if the municipalities haven't taken advantage of it. But we very carefully crafted this so that we would provide a local option that would get some more money to municipalities, and it really will help at least potentially the Anchorage municipality.
Okay. Some additional information, as Representative Jacko was pointing out, here are the figures that were arrived at. We would be in the upper tier of taxing cigarettes, but not the highest. Washington State, we would be at 30 cents per pack. Washington State is 31 cents per pack. Oregon is 27 cents per pack. And California is 35 cents per pack. Like I said, I guess I would support the amendment, having thought about it now, and with the idea that we could increase it higher, we could adjust it lower, all sorts of things. If other of our colleagues felt like they wanted to direct more of the monies toward the local level and allow local communities to, you know, we have no guarantee that anyone will exercise the option at the local level in the foreseeable future with the kind of trepidation that many people at the local level have about just opening the discussion of tax increases. In surveys, people noticed that increased taxes on cigarettes and tobacco are among the most popular with the public compared to other forms of taxation. Representative Davis.
Quick question for Representative Grunberg. Do you have any figure floating around off the top of your head that you might be thinking of for Anchorage? I mean,
well, I would hope that Anchorage would. No, I don't know whether they would use it. I don't know what how high they would go. At the local level, we have a real problem because of Proposition 24. That's not the only reason we have a problem, but that adds to the problem. And this is one of the few areas, since we don't have a local sales tax that could generate some significant money for the municipality. I don't feel real strongly about it. If the chairman it's his bill, if he wants to.
Representative Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I've indicated before, my main concern here is not so much with regards to the revenue aspect of this. I've owned a general merchandise store for the past 10 years, and ever since I've established my store, I've never sold cigarettes simply because I'm concerned about the health aspect of it. And that's what my concern is here again, that if we increase this tax to what Representative Gall is proposing here, I think it'll be an even greater deterrent. That's where my concern is. That's why I would support increasing it.
Okay. Representative Davis, would you like to restate your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move an amendment to increase the excise tax line 25, replace the number 10 with the number 15 mil.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment's adopted, increasing 10 to 15. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Is there anyone I've missed in the audience or on the teleconference network to make a comment on the bill? If not, I'll entertain a motion on committee substitute for House Bill number 80, as amended.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The motion is to move the bill out with individual recommendations. Is there any objections? If not, so ordered. Is there any further business to come before the committee this morning? We still have a couple of items remaining, potential committee legislation. You'll remember that I raised the issue of the acupuncture bill last time, and there may be two other bills floating around out there that I'll hopefully bring before this committee for consideration at the next meeting. So think about acupuncture, and I'll bring the other two items up in the very near future. Representative Rubin, no. Nothing further. If there's no further business to come before us, please wait around and sign the sheet, and I'll adjourn the meeting at 10:02 a.m.
Thanks. Oh, I know.